Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Along with Jim Garrity of National Review, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, as usual. We start with the good. And, Jim, we were joking yesterday that Dan Rather might be licking his chops to see Brian Williams be canned over his admission that he's repeatedly told a lie about getting shot down in a helicopter in Iraq. Turns out Dan Rather actually thinks that this is a big to-do about nothing. But the good news today is that while some at NBC are reportedly looking to paper this over and move on with no punishment for Brian Williams whatsoever, one person definitely not in that camp, according to the New York Post, is former NBC Nightly News anchor Tom Brokaw. According to Page Six, Brokaw wants Williams' head on a platter. He is making a lot of noise at NBC that a lesser journalist or producer would have been immediately fired or suspended for a false report. Brokaw and the former NBC News president, Steve Capus, knew this was a false story for a long time and have been extremely uncomfortable with it. NBC bosses don't understand how serious this is. Nobody in a leadership position is talking to the troops. Nobody has addressed it, according to the source. So, Jim, it still looks like ultimately Williams is going to get maybe not even a slap on the wrist here, other than the mocking that he's gotten on social media and the internet over the past couple of days. But to have Tom Brokaw, maybe not so publicly, but at least to get it out through the media that he is appalled at this, is good that somebody still is worried about integrity and the reputation of a news service.
You know, Greg, the only way this can truly be resolved is in the traditional manner of the news media's culture of resolving disputes. And by this, I mean the giant gang fights, as we've seen in Anchorman. For Tom Brokaw to lead his crew and Brian Williams leads his crew, and they rough each other up until one says uncle. I grew up watching Tom Brokaw. I always kind of liked him. He wrote the famous book about The Greatest Generation and stuff. And, you know, I am sure you can find cases where people didn't like, you know, the questions he asked or the way he covered Reagan or things like that back then. But he really does seem like what we used to expect a news anchor to be. And it's really refreshing to hear that somebody at NBC is really bothered by this. And we've talked about how the culture that was once there of Tom Brokaw and Tim Russert and that crew changing a lot over time, and particularly as MSNBC became this more outright, outrageous, tampon earring wearing, Al Sharpton spotlighting, Chelsea Clinton hiring, you know, extension of the Democratic media complex, that there's somebody there who doesn't like what's going on. And I don't know whether, you know, Brokaw is going to get more outspoken about this, but I think he recognizes that to be credible, a network cannot have a guy who's been telling all kinds of, you know, at the very best exaggerated and at the very worst just made up stories about his Iraq war exploits. Oh, by the way, there's another story out about, he talks about seeing a body float by while he was in the French Quarter in New Orleans during Hurricane Katrina. Well, the French Quarter wasn't really flooded that badly, I understand. But basically, the people in New Orleans are saying there's an odor to that story. So now the question is, how much has Brian Williams been exaggerating throughout his career? I salute Tom Brokaw. I'm sure he's, you know, upsetting a lot of people at NBC News. I'm sure he's upsetting the suits, and I'm sure it doesn't make, you know, Brian Williams feel good to hear this. But it's nice to hear somebody kind of standing up and saying, hey, this is, you know, not acceptable if you're in the news business.
Bad Martini now. We get to a story that I'm sure a lot of you have heard quite a bit about. It happened shortly after we recorded yesterday. The president speaking at the National Prayer Breakfast in Washington and talking about a number of different things. He addressed ISIS, but as he deplored their activities, the rape, the savage beheadings and so forth, he said it's really important that we not think too highly of ourselves.
Humanity has been grappling with these questions throughout human history. And lest we get on our high horse and think this is unique to some other place, remember that during the Crusades and the Inquisition, people committed terrible deeds in the name of Christ. In our home country, slavery and Jim Crow all too often was justified in the name of Christ.
Jim, the moral equivocator strikes again.
I was going to say, you know, each day or each week we end up with something new from the president, some new floor that he crashes through in terms of our expectations. Because The story of the week, Greg, is that ISIS burned a Jordanian pilot alive and recorded it for all the world to see. And then the president warned American Christians not to get on a high horse. The contradiction there is appalling. We've been hearing this from generally ill-informed, whiny, moral equivalence types on the left since 9/11. And in a way, somebody invoking the Crusades during a discussion of Al-Qaeda or Islamic extremism or ISIS these days, if you invoke the Crusades, I kind of just tune you out, right? It's kind of a die marker for somebody you really shouldn't take that seriously, because if Christianity were still launching Crusades, if the Inquisition was still going on in Spain, then yeah, maybe you'd have a much stronger argument. But the point is that, no, first of all, is there anybody who's saying that Christians are perfect and the history of Christianity is you know, this is a Paul Krugman level straw man, right? I mean, first you're attacking an argument that nobody's actually making. The argument that usually comes forward is that, look, if you look in the Quran, Muhammad runs around killing people, right? I mean, he is a warrior. He is out to fight. He is out to get people who do not believe what he believes. Unsurprisingly, there are Muslims who look at this and say, hey, that's what I'm supposed to do. If we're Christians and we say, hey, we're supposed to go out and fight a war, the only thing we can really point to are Jesus is overturning a table in a temple, right? Jesus did not run around killing people saying, believe what I believe or I'm going to come get you. And that, I've always felt, is a fundamental difference between the two religions and explains why the two religions may have a very different view towards warfare and violence today. Well, we can't have this kind of intelligent discussion when somebody insists upon saying, well, we in the West are in no position to judge, or we in the West are too flawed to render judgment on that. I will quote the great Western leader, James Tiberius Kirk, who in his confrontation with God said, actually was a false deity, in the infamous Star Trek V, and pointed like, who are you to judge? And he said, who do I have to be? Right? I mean, what? We don't have enough moral stature to judge ISIS? Are you kidding me? Are you out of your mind? It just is mind-boggling that here we are, February 2015, ISIS still on the march, and the president of the United States is deeply, deeply concerned about American Christians being on a high horse. Meanwhile, ISIS just killed the horse. Right? Anyway, this is a particularly bitter, bad martini today. And one that I think listeners can kind of tell is really, really sticking in my craw regarding the president. And we'll see. Oh, by the way, you notice he wasn't saying this stuff in 2008, 2012, huh, Greg?
No, he certainly wasn't. And just to provide a little more historical perspective, he left out why the Crusades were launched. They were launched to stop marauding Muslims who were running around killing everyone who didn't agree with them. Huh. Hard to relate to what's going on today compared to that, huh? All right, on to the crazy martini now. And if you didn't like the president's foreign policy in the last martini, you're going to love this one. This is from Foreign Policy Magazine. Critics of President Barack Obama's foreign policy have for years assailed his administration for responding too slowly to crises ranging from Syria to Russia. In a far-reaching blueprint laying out the administration's worldview, the White House on Friday will defend its deliberate approach and make clear that it intends to continue on a path of what it calls strategic patience. The document will be Obama's second and likely last before he leaves office in early 2017. It aims to rebut criticism that he has consistently waited too long to respond to challenges like the rise of the Islamic State and Moscow's military aggression in Ukraine, allowing the problems to worsen while his administration debated ways to act. The document argues that such an approach was instead part of a carefully constructed strategy designed to ensure that the United States considered all options before getting ensnared in risky and potentially open-ended conflicts. It will effectively make the case for Obama as a prudent president who is ever mindful of possible future risks. So, Jim, if you just stand by and do nothing, you're the mature one in the room.
You know what's kind of fascinating is, you know, strategic patience is what you call leading from behind slowly. As somebody who wrote a novel parodying Washington, you see things like this, and you're like, ah, God, why didn't I think of that? It would have been really funny, except it's true. And, like, here's the thing. There are two ways to look at this. One is that the idea that Obama is at his heart, believes that the problem with the world, one of the big problems of the world, is America is too active, too interventionist. We're too high on our horse, as we talked about in that previous martini. That we need to be reticent. We need to be humble. We need to be apologetic for our past actions. The last thing the world needs is us out leading more crusades or leading more efforts to fight those who we have the audacity to think of as evil, whether it's ISIS, whether it's the aggression of Putin, whether it's the collapsing states and Islamism and Islamist extremists, you know, filling the vacuum. We need to not do that. The world will take care of itself. Option two is he just has no idea what to do here. Option three is that, and that's something I've kind of leaned towards, is that, look, Obama doesn't really think he was sent to fix the world other than to provide a role model, right? That he is, you know, once again, at that prayer breakfast yesterday, President Above It All, Objective Observer, the professor came to explain to us why the world was the way it was. He was not there to present the American view to the rest of the world. He was there to present the rest of the world's view to America. Taking our side would be too much for us to ask. He clearly believes he was sent here to fundamentally transform the United States of America. And that comes from stuff like Obamacare. That comes from stuff like amnesty. That comes to stuff from massive new regulations and you know, the expansion of food stamps. Getting as many people on reliant upon government as possible. And that's what he's here to do. Fighting ISIS, you hear the way he talks about it. It's just not what he's, you know, it's just not his thing. Russia and Ukraine, it's just a headache to deal with. He's here to change us, not to change the rest of the world. And, you know, we will say he's going to be remembered as an extraordinarily consequential president. I agree with that. I just think, you know, that it's he was astoundingly the wrong man for this moment in history. And we're stuck with him for another 2 years, Greg.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out the moment he would have been right for us in history. I don't think there is one, but
early to mid-90s, we might have been able to afford, you know, like, you know, we could be afford to be quasi-isolationist and all that kind of stuff. But and you know, it was the dot-com boom was taking care of enough prosperity. But yeah, there we go. That's where we are. Have a good weekend, everybody.
Jim, it's been a crazy week and even crazier than usual. Talk to you Monday.
See you Monday.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. Have a great weekend, everyone. Please join us on Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.